tall white guy.
That was Roy Mars,
said Jameson.
He worked there.
Montgomery nodded, but I didn't know that was his name back then. I pulled out my stuff and showed him, but he told me they weren't interested in crap like that. A lot of former soldiers in Texas, he said. Then he pointed to a case full of guns and old medals dudes had pawned and never come back for. Bogart and Decker exchanged a glance. Montgomery continued, anyway, that pissed me off. I asked the guy if he was a vet, and he said that was none of my business, and if I was looking for a handout, I'd come to the wrong place, because they were barely making a living as it was. Then the door opened, and another customer came in. I walked over to the corner and watched. When the man opened the cash register, I saw all the money in there. That's when I knew the dude had lied to me. He had money. He wasn't barely getting by. That pissed me off even more.
What did you do then? Asked Bogart.
Went back to my car and waited. Army teaches patience. I was hunting this dude and didn't care how long it took. He closed the shop up at 9, got in his car and drove off. I followed him. He got to his place, which was in the middle of nowhere. No other homes around. That was fine with me. He went inside. I parked my car and got out.
What kind of car were you driving? Asked Decker.
Montgomery didn't hesitate. Rusted out piece of shit, 77 V8 Pontiac Grand Prix. Dark blue, big as a house. You could land a chopper on the sucker's hood.
Surprised you remember that in such detail.
I lived in that car for about a year.
Did you own it? Asked Decker.
Montgomery lifted his gaze to him.
I stole it from somewhere and got plates off a ride in an impoundment lot in Tennessee. Don't remember where.
So you were waiting outside the house, prompted Decker.
Right. I pulled surveillance on the place. Again, what the Army taught me. I was able to see in a couple of windows without being seen. It was just the two of them. Him and, I supposed, his wife. I remember she was black, which surprised me, him being white.
Okay, said Decker. What then?
I waited until maybe 11:30 or a little later.
You're sure about that? Asked Decker. Montgomery flashed him a surprised look.
Yeah, why?
Just trying to confirm. Keep going.
So as I got in through the back door, it wasn't locked. I had my gun out.
What kind of gun? Asked Bogart.
My service piece, one I tried to pawn.
Decker nodded. And then what?
They weren't downstairs. I had seen the lights go out and then the lights go on upstairs. Figured they were going to bed. I snuck up the stairs, but I got messed up on the room they were in. I went into one bedroom, but it was empty. Girly posters on the wall, athletic gear everywhere. So I was guessing it was their kid's room. I was worried maybe their kid was sleeping in the bed, but it was empty.
And that's when you saw it? Asked Decker, which drew a sharp glance from Jameson and Davenport. Montgomery licked his lips and nodded.
Yeah, the shotgun was in a rack on the wall. I thought if I was going to do this, I couldn't use my service piece. They might be able to trace it to me, you know, through ballistics.
Not if they didn't have your gun, pointed out Bogart.
Yeah, but they might arrest me and then they'd have my gun,
countered Montgomery. Keep going, said Decker.
I took the shotgun, found the ammo for it in a little drawer attached to the rack and loaded it. Then I went into their bedroom. They were in bed asleep, but I got them up. They were scared shitless. Dude remembered me. I told him I wanted the money from the till back at the pawn shop. If he did that, I'd let him live. He said that was impossible because the owner took it every night and put it in the bank's night deposit slot. That really ticked me off. See, I thought he was the owner, but he was just some little prick clerk. But he had talked big like he owned the damn place. I don't like people lying to me. Don't sit well. Bet the son of a bitch never wore the uniform. And he's looking down on me, telling me he's not giving me a handout.
Montgomery shook his head with finality.
Who the hell does he think he is? No way I'm letting that pass. So I blew him away. His wife was screaming. I couldn't let her live, right? So I shot her, too. Montgomery stopped abruptly and looked around at Jameson and Davenport.
What's wrong? Asked Decker.
I felt bad about popping the woman, but there was nothing else I could do. He shrugged. I've killed people, on the battlefield and off, but I never killed no woman before. It was his fault, not hers.
And then what did you do? Asked Decker, hiding his disgust at the man's apportioning of blame for Lucinda Mars's murder onto her husband. Milligan was busy writing all this down in his tablet, but he too looked upset at what he was hearing.
I panicked. I mean, you get the adrenaline rush when you're doing it, but when it's done, it's like you're coming off a crack high. You crash. My first thought was just to run for it, but then I looked down at the bodies and thought of something else. When I had been scoping out the place, I peeked in the garage, saw the gas can. I ran down and got it and poured the gas over them and then set them on fire.
But why? Asked Bogart.
I thought...
He faltered.
I thought maybe if they and the house burned down, they might just think it was a fire that killed them, and not that nobody had shot them.
What'd you do with the shotgun? Asked Decker.
Put it back on the rack.
Then you left?
Yeah. I jumped in my car and hightailed it out of there.
Did you see another vehicle while you were driving away? Asked Decker. Montgomery shook his head.
I was so screwed up in the head right then I could have passed a convoy of army tanks and never even noticed it.
Were you wearing gloves? Asked Decker.
Gloves?
When you picked up the shotgun.
Oh, yeah, I had on gloves. Didn't want to leave no prints behind. I was in the army. They were on file.
He paused and looked at Decker.
And that's it.
Not quite. How did you find out about Melvin Mars?
Oh, that, said Montgomery offhandedly. This was just within the last year. I was here in prison. Dude told me about Mars. He said he heard it from a guy over in Texas.
Dude have a name? Asked Bogart.
Donnie Crockett, said Montgomery promptly. And where is he now? In a coffin. He was on death row, too. They executed him 4 months ago.
Bogart and Decker looked at each other while Davenport kept her gaze squarely on Montgomery. She said,
Why would he mention Melvin Mars to you?
Didn't you know? Said Montgomery with a brief grin. I played some ball at Ole Miss. I was a fullback. That meant I slammed my body against other bodies all game long so the tailback could look good. Now, I never played against Mars because I was a lot older, but I heard of him later on. Didn't connect it to what I'd done in Texas. But then when my buddy told me the details, I had my wife Google it for me. When I saw the pictures of the parents, I knew they were the ones I'd killed.
And you decided to come forward why? Asked Decker. Because God might go easier on you?
Montgomery shrugged. Look, I'm gonna die anyway. Screwed up my whole life. This dude Mars lost out on a lot because of me. Guess I'm just trying to make amends. Do one good thing before I kick off.
He stopped and gave Decker a searching look.
They are going to let him go, right? He didn't kill his parents. I did.
We'll see, said Decker. It's the reason we're here.
I told the local cops stuff that I knew about the house and all, details they didn't let out to the public. It was me. What else can I say?
I think you've said a lot, answered Decker.
Bogart said, And you never met Melvin Mars?
Montgomery shook his head.
No, sir, I never met the man. If he'd been home that night, I would have killed him, too.
They all fell silent for a few moments. Decker was studying Montgomery closely while Bogart looked down at some notes. Jameson and Davenport were watching Decker. Decker finally said, So you eventually remarried?
Montgomery nodded.
A couple years later, I was already in my 50s. But Regina was 20 years younger, so we had a kid. I tried to settle down and get cleaned up, but it was no good.
He motioned to his head again.
Pains came back. Had them all the time at that point. I just went nuts. Did shit. Regina took our son and ran for it. I started robbing banks and selling drugs. Murdered a couple dudes I was doing business with. And then I killed a state trooper. That's why I'm here.
Where does your current wife live? Asked Decker.
Montgomery's eyebrows flicked up at this.
Why?
We'll need to talk to her.
Why?
He asked again. She's part of this chain. We have to look at every link.
Montgomery considered this for a long moment.
She lives about 20 miles from here. Prison has the address. Moved there when I got transferred here.
And you've been married how long?
About 18 years, though I've been in prison the last 9. Like I said, she left me when I went out of control. Hell, Tommy was just a little boy then. But when I got the death sentence, she came to the prison to see me. We never officially got divorced. I guess she felt sorry for me.
How many kids do you have? Asked Decker.
Just Tommy. He lives with his mom, but he never comes here. Don't blame him. Wasn't there for him, so why should he be there for me? He's a really good football player, from what she tells me.
Does she visit you often?
Asked Davenport.
Montgomery leveled his gaze on her.
Every week, like clockwork.
That's nice,
said Davenport, drawing a wary look from Montgomery.
Anyone else ever visit you? Asked Decker.
I don't have anybody else.
No lawyers or anything?
They tried and failed and left.
Decker said, when is your execution date?
3 weeks from yesterday.
Davenport asked,
why did you choose the electric chair over lethal injection?
Everyone looked at her.
Montgomery grinned.
Figure where I'm going, I better get used to being hot. Why not go out with a bang?
What are your wife's plans after you're gone? Decker asked.
Start over somewhere else.
Right, said Decker. We'll tell her you said hello when we see her.
I'm doing the right thing, right?
Said Montgomery nervously.
That's not for me to answer, replied Decker. One more thing. Did you steal any money or property from the Marses?
Montgomery stared up at him, a wary expression on his features.
No. Did the cops say I did?
Did you commit any other crimes while you were in town? Asked Decker.
No. I told you. I killed them and tore out of there.
So you didn't stay around and do a day's worth of labor or anything?
Montgomery looked at him like Decker had lost his mind.
After murdering 2 people?
So, no?
Hell no.
And how far did you drive after you left town?
I don't know.
You remember a city?
Montgomery thought for a moment.
Maybe Abilene. Yeah, that's right. I jumped on Interstate 20 and just headed east. Ran smack into Abilene.
And that was about, what, 180 miles, maybe a 3-hour drive?
About that, I guess, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
As they started to leave, Montgomery called after them.
Can you tell Mr. Mars that I'm sorry?
Decker looked back at him.
I don't really think that's a good idea.
Chapter 19. They drove directly to Regina Montgomery's house, which, as Montgomery had said, was only about 20 minutes from the prison. The skies were threatening rain, and, as the temperature dipped, perhaps even some snow, though it rarely fell in this part of Alabama. Bogart drove, and Decker rode next to him. Davenport was in the back seat, writing up some notes on her electronic tablet. Milligan was next to her, doing the same thing on his. Jameson was to Milligan's left. She said,
that was one scary man.
Well, at least the public won't have to worry about him anymore, said Bogart.
Do you think his head injury made him do all those things?
Asked Jameson.
I don't know, replied Bogart. In the eyes of the law, it apparently didn't matter if it did or not.
I guess not,
she said doubtfully.
Lisa, what was your opinion of him?
Asked Bogart as he glanced at her in the car's rear view. She looked up from her tablet.
My down and dirty is the guy is being truthful. He's obviously cagey as hell, but he also seems genuinely remorseful. And if he is suffering from PTSD and that head wound affected critical areas of his brain, What he later did could make sense.
She saw Decker staring out of the side window, obviously not paying attention to what she was saying.
What did you think, Amos?
She said. When he said nothing, she reached forward and touched his shoulder. He jerked and glanced back at her.
I'm sorry,
she said.
I was asking what you thought of Montgomery.
I think it's more important what we think of Regina Montgomery, he said.
And why is that?
She asked, looking confused.
I remember you saying we needed to find out if Montgomery had family.
And I hope we're just about to get some answers.
Regina Montgomery lived in one of a line of old duplexes that looked about a few rusted nails and a few more termite bites from falling down. They parked out front. There was an old cream-colored Buick with a tattered faux leather top sitting out in a front yard that held not a single blade of grass. The entire area looked blighted. In the distance, they could hear a freight train's whistle. A light rain started to fall as they walked up to the front door. It had a pyramid-shaped glass with a crack in it at about eye level. Bogart knocked on the door. Davenport said,
The place next door looks abandoned.
Half the places here look abandoned, noted Bogart.
They heard approaching footsteps and the door was opened. Regina Montgomery was of medium height, thin, and her hair was more white than brown. She was dressed in faded jeans, flats, and a sweater with some smears of dirt near the waist. They identified themselves and were invited in. The front room was small, with a few pieces of cheap and battered furniture. She led them into the kitchen, moved some boxes and stacks of paper off chairs, and motioned for them to sit down around the small table in the middle of the space. There were only four chairs, so Milligan and Davenport stood. Regina looked nervously at each of them before settling her gaze on Bogart, who had produced his FBI shield at the front door.
What do you want with me?
She asked bluntly. Just to ask some questions. We've spoken with your husband.
Just so you know, while it's true we never got divorced, we haven't lived together for a long time. He's been in prison for years.
But legally, he's still your husband.
Yes.
When did you learn about his maybe having murdered Roy and Lucinda Mars?
She leaned back in the chair and assumed a focused expression.
When I went to the prison to visit Chuck.
Do you remember the date?
No, not exactly. I go every week, though. Let me think.
She picked up a pack of cigarettes off the table, lit one, blew smoke out her nostrils, and was silent for a few moments, then said,
Maybe a couple months or so. Maybe. I'm not really sure.
Were you surprised? Asked Bogart.
What, that he'd killed people? Hell no. I knew he could be violent. He'd murdered other people. It's why they're going to execute him. He killed an Alabama state trooper. That's going to get you the damn death penalty every time.
He said he had you look up the Mars' case online to make sure he was right, prompted Bogart.
Yeah, I went over to the library. I don't have a computer. I printed out their pictures and some other information and brought it to him at the prison. He recognized them right off.
Did you suggest that he tell the authorities?
She shook her head.
That was Chuck's idea. But I thought it was the right thing to do. One way he could, you know, make up for what he'd done a little.
Decker looked around the space, his mind taking snapshots of everything he was seeing. After your husband is executed, what are your plans?
She snorted.
Ain't got none. I live here and can barely make the rent. I work at the grocery store and then have a second job at the McDonald's down the road.
Your son lives with you? Asked Decker. She nodded.
Tommy, he's a good boy. He'll do all right.
His father said he was a good ball player. She nodded.
Yeah, he is.
He doesn't visit his dad?
She looked at him crossly.
No, why should he? It was good of you to stick by your husband through all this,
noted Jameson.
We had some good times together, a few good times. And he is Tommy's dad, and I blame the damn government. Chuck fights for his country, gets a chunk of his head torn out, and what did they do for him? Nothing. Now that's a damn crime, if you ask me. I think you'd find a lot of people to agree with you on that,
observed Davenport. Anything else you can tell us? Asked Bogart.
I don't know nothing else.
She looked at her watch.
And I gotta get to work. My shift starts in about 20 minutes.
She walked them to the door and shut it firmly behind them. Bogart looked at Decker.
Okay, what now?
Now we go see the howling cougars. The rain had started to fall more steadily as they approached the high school that Decker had located on his phone.
What are we doing here? Asked Bogart.
You mentioned the howling cougars,
said Davenport. Decker nodded. The picture's at Regina Montgomery's. Her son was in his Howling Cougars football jersey.
Okay, so you want to talk to him, but he's never visited his father,
pointed out Jameson. I don't want to ask him about his father.
Bogart parked in the visitor's parking lot, and they went into the office. A few minutes later, they were headed to the gym with the assistant principal.
Tommy has finished his classes for the day, said the man as they walked down the corridor. But the team is doing some work in the gym.
But isn't football season over? Asked Bogart.
The man smiled. This is Alabama. Football season is never really over, and we won the conference championship this season. The boys want to repeat next year, just getting in some extra work.
He left them in the gym after speaking to the coach, who brought Tommy Montgomery over a minute later. He was a good-looking kid, taller than his father, with broad shoulders and thick arms and thicker legs.
He looked at them all with unfriendly eyes.
Coach said you're here about my old man.
That's right, said Bogart.
I got nothing to say about him, because I don't know him. He was never around. I'll be glad when they do him in, and he's out of my life for good.
Decker looked over at the other players who were going through some formation reps.
What position do you play? Asked Decker.
Tommy looked up at him.
Why? You know anything about football?
A little. You're undersized for the O or D line. Linebacker, too. But you've got length in your arms and legs, and your calves are rocks. Your thighs are ripped. Your fingers are calloused. You touch the ball a lot, and you run farther than the line of scrimmage. You're either a safety or a tailback or a receiver.
Tommy appraised him in a different light.
You did play ball. I'm a tailback,
Jameson said proudly.
Decker here played at Ohio State and then with the Cleveland Browns.
Tommy's jaw dropped. Damn, really?
Decker said, what's your best running play?
We call it the firecracker. Fake the A-gap blast to the fullback, pitch to me on the left edge. I cut back to the B-gap and then make a stutter to clear the line and let the tight end do a cutback scrape on the backer. Then I hit the corner and I'm gone. Always good for at least 10 yards until the safety makes a tackle.
We run it on third and long because the box ain't stacked, and the secondary's playing cover too soft, thinking we're going to pass.
I didn't understand a single word of that,
said a bemused Davenport.
If it makes you feel any better, neither did I, commented Bogart.
Decker glanced over at the other players running a formation.
So you obviously run the tight end on that side if his job is to scrape the backer.
Yep, said Tommy. Extra blocker.
Right, but he's not being properly utilized.
He looked back at Tommy.
Okay, tell your coach to scratch the stutter. The blast would have frozen the interior lineman anyway, so don't waste the time. And you want to hit the B-gap at speed. You let the left tackle crash down to seal the edge. The guard comes around to do the scrape on the backer. That allows the tight end to release, and you follow his butt down the field. He engages the safety with his left shoulder if the guy comes up and tries to make a play and forces him to the outside while you push off hard to the inside. If the corner's in soft cover too, he probably will have already committed to the outside edge because of the pitch, and you'll have a receiver on him blocking, so you don't have to worry much about him. If you got decent wheels, you're home free down the seam for a lot more than 10 yards. Maybe end zone if you're fast enough to beat the angle the other safety takes.
Tommy broke into a broad grin.
Damn, man. Thanks.
You're welcome. You got any scholarship offers?
I've been starting since my freshman year. I'll be a senior next year, and I've already got 3 offers, 2 from D1s and 1 from a D2.
That's great. Good for you.
Look, we talked to your mom about her future after your dad.
Decker let his voice trail off, and he stared expectantly at Tommy.
Yeah? And then you'll be off in a year. I hope she'll be able to make ends meet. Oh, she'll be okay, with the money and all.
Bogart started to say something, but Decker said,
Right, the money. She started to tell us about that, but then she had to go to work.
Yep, it's a lot. Enough for her to be okay.
Well, that's what she said. Do you know from where?
Insurance. My scumball father had a life insurance policy. Go Go figure.
And it pays off even if he's to be executed? Asked Bogart.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Mom said.
So a lot of money, said Decker. Do you know how much?
Not exactly, no. But she said she'd be moving away from here after I graduate and then settle down wherever I go to college. She's going to buy a place and not have to work.
He paused. I mean, she's always been there for me, you know. Most guys probably don't want their moms around when they're at college, but it's been rough, you know, and she's... You know what I mean?
He finished looking a little embarrassed.
I know exactly what you mean, said Decker. Good luck with your ball playing.
He tapped his temple.
And never lead with your head. It's not worth it.
They left Tommy there and walked back out to the car.
How did you know, Decker?
Said Davenport.
Know what?
That Regina Montgomery was coming into money.
I didn't know until he told me, but I suspected it.
But why did you suspect it? Asked Bogart.
Because dead people have absolutely no use for cash.
Chapter 20. Charles Montgomery was in court today in Alabama and gave an allocution to the judge that he killed your parents.
Decker tapped his hand on the arm of his chair as he sat looking at Melvin Mars, who was finishing a full week of rehab at a facility attached to the hospital. Mars looked pretty much normal. The swelling was gone, along with the soreness. The docs had given him a clean bill of health. He was to be released the following day. Mars put down the weights he had been lifting and toweled off his face.
So what does that mean exactly?
It's a formal statement under oath that what he said is true. It included specific details about the murders of your parents.
And the court accepted it?
Decker nodded.
He had come here today by himself. He wanted some time alone with Mars.
So what now?
Decker said, that statement has been forwarded to the court here in Texas that has jurisdiction over your case. The court will review it and then make a determination.
What about the people who actually prosecuted me?
Well, they've retired, but the state lawyers are in the loop and they are also considering everything. If they come down on the side of believing Montgomery and throw their support to you, then I don't think the court has any choice but to set you free, pretty much immediately.
Mars wrapped the towel around his neck, his muscles straining against the tight t-shirt, and sat down opposite Decker.
How long you reckon all that will take?
I can't imagine that long.
What was he like? Mars asked quietly.
Who, Montgomery?
Mars nodded, his gaze on the floor.
Probably like a lot of guys you've known in prison.
So just a screwed-up asshole looking to hurt people?
He was a Vietnam vet. Said stuff over there gave him headaches. Couldn't take the pain. Turned to crime to pay for the drugs because the VA wouldn't help him.
But why'd he kill my parents?
You really want to hear this? It can't change anything.
Mars glanced up at him.
Tell me.
Wrong place, wrong time. Montgomery tried to pawn stuff at your dad's shop. He said your dad wasn't buying, maybe dissed him. He got pissed, followed him home, wanted money, but your dad told him he was only the clerk there, that the owner put the money in the bank every night. So he did what he did, using your shotgun he found in your room and that gas can in the garage.
Mars studied the floor.
Then you believe him?
He had details only the person there would have known.
Mars looked up again.
But do you believe he did it?
Decker said nothing.
So you don't believe him then?
Doesn't matter what I believe. It matters what the truth is.
And that doesn't come close to answering my question, Mars said irritably.
Why do you have to make everything so damn hard, Decker?
My job is to find the truth, Melvin. I told you that the first time I met you. Right now, I don't believe anybody.
Including me?
With you, I'm getting there. Faster than I normally do.
He added, it's probably because you're so lovable.
Mars laughed. Didn't think you had a sense of humor.
I don't. You must be rubbing off on me.
So where do I go while all this stuff is being decided?
A safe house maintained by the FBI. It's in Austin.
Haven't been back to Austin since I played at UT.
I figured.
Decker paused.
Got a question for you.
Okay, shoot.
I read your mother's full autopsy report.
Mars stiffened as he looked warily at Decker.
And what? Did you see something off?
I saw that the coroner concluded that your mother had terminal brain cancer. Mars nearly toppled off the stool. He managed to keep his balance by slamming a hand down on the floor and righting himself. I can tell from your reaction that you didn't know.
That's bullshit, exclaimed Mars.
Not according to the report. There were pictures of the tumor. I won't show them to you because the shotgun blast had done a lot of damage. Stage 4, pretty much always fatal. It's what Ted Kennedy died of.
Mars was staring at the floor, his eyes wide in disbelief.
She never said anything to me. Nothing.
Did she show any signs of being sick?
Mars pressed the towel against his face and began to sob into it. Decker, unprepared for this, sat back and simply waited. When the sobs finally subsided, Mars rubbed his face dry and slowly sat up, his chest still heaving.
She lost weight, didn't have much of an appetite, and she had headaches.
Migraines, she said.
Did she ever go to a hospital? Receive any treatment?
I can't believe this. She had brain cancer and they didn't tell me? She was dying and they didn't think to mention it to their only child?
I know this is a shock, Melvin, but if she started treatment, you would have known, right?
I don't know. I was gone a lot.
But she didn't lose her hair or nothing like that. I wouldn't have noticed that.
Was she still working at the end? Mars looked up.
No. Dad said he wanted her to take a break. I just thought it was because of the money I'd be getting. I never...
His voice trailed away.
Would they have gone to a doctor in town?
I guess. They had their dentist, and Mom used a chiropractor sometimes. All the work she did made her stiff.
Do you know the name of the doctor?
No.
He paused.
I guess back then it was all about me, Decker. I really didn't have that much to do with my parents. I was so busy with football, but
I still loved them. I was going to take care of them, but shit.
He looked down, his features full of a guilty misery.
You were dealing with a lot for a young guy, Melvin. I wouldn't beat yourself up too badly.
This brain cancer, do you think it has anything to do with their deaths?
I don't see how, but what I don't see right now could fill a library.
Mars sat up and wiped his face again.
What do I do if they let me loose, Decker? He said in a hollow tone.
He looked across at Decker like a little boy lost in a world he didn't even know existed. Decker appeared uncomfortable at this query and said nothing.
Mars looked down and continued. I was nearly 22 when I left the world. I'm almost 42 now. I was a kid then. Now I'm a man. But back then I still had plans. Lots of them. Now, I don't have a damn clue what I'm supposed to do.
He glanced up at Decker, saw the blank face staring back at him, and looked away.
Forget it. I'll figure it out. Always do.
Let's take it one step at a time, Melvin.
Yeah, right, said Mars absently.
Decker leaned forward. It was time to discuss what he had come here to talk about.
What if you didn't do it, and Charles Montgomery also didn't do it?
Mars sat up looking bewildered.
What? What's the third option, Melvin? That's what I want to know.
Third option?
Your parents' past is too fuzzy. Nobody looked at that back then because they had you dead to rights for the murders. But there are too many holes. There might be something in one of those holes that would explain why they were killed.
Like what?
I don't know.
But why don't you believe Montgomery? He knew stuff from my house.
He could have been told all that by whoever really did it.
But why would he do that? Confess to a crime he didn't commit?
Because he's already a dead man. What's two more murders? They can't execute him a second time. And what if someone asked him to do it in return for setting up his wife and kid for life?
Mars slumped back in his chair.
Set them up for life? That's big money. My parents, why would anyone with big money care about them? Or care about getting me out of prison after all this time?
I don't have answers for that. I just have the questions.
Mars rubbed his face with a sweaty hand.
You're throwing me for a loop with all this shit, man. First you tell me my mom had cancer, and now this?
He added angrily.
I figured you might want to know the truth. The real truth. If I spent 20 years of my life in prison for something I didn't do,
I'd want to know exactly who put me there, and why. Mars stared at him for a few seconds and then started to nod.
Yeah, me too. So how can I help?
By remembering anything you can about your parents. Something they said that seemed odd. Letters, phone calls they might have gotten that seemed off somehow. Visitors. Anything that might tell us where they really came from.
I'll have to give that some thought.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. And neither are you.
Chapter 21. Milligan put down his cup of coffee and stared across the table at Decker. The team was having dinner at an Applebee's in Austin, where they had moved Mars after his release from the rehab facility. The rain was pouring down outside, and they had spent a long day going over the details of everything they could find about Charles Montgomery. Milligan said, "There is a life insurance policy that does pay off when Montgomery dies."
"But it's only for $30,000,
said Jameson, who was sitting next to Decker.
"But it's big money to her, I bet," replied Milligan.
"Not enough to buy a house and not have to work,"
pointed out Davenport.
"So maybe Tommy Montgomery was exaggerating," countered Milligan.
"I don't think so."
Milligan said, "Why don't you just tell us why you really think Montgomery is lying? Come on, Decker, we're a team, right? We need to share information."
Decker put down his fork and wiped his mouth using his napkin.
"It's a question of cash flow."
"Excuse me," said Milligan in an aggressive tone. "With the wife?"
"No, the husband."
Decker had selected a salad, though he really wanted the ribs. When he'd made noises about ordering the rack of ribs, Jameson had given him a look that had made him feel guilty enough to go with the leafy vegetables. He had dropped 15 more pounds, and his knees didn't ache all the time anymore. But in an act of defiance, he had ordered an Amstel Light. He finished off his beer and looked over at the man with the expression of someone having to do something he really didn't want to be bothered doing.
"Montgomery told us he had no money when he got to town. That's why he went to the pawn shop. He rode into town on an empty gas tank and an empty stomach. He told us after he killed the Marses, he tore out of town. He didn't steal anything from them or anyone else. He didn't work a job before he left. He said he drove all the way to Abilene, which is about a 3-hour trip, without stopping."
"Okay, so?"
"He was driving a 77 Impala with a V8. I looked it up. Brand new, that car got about 18 miles to the gallon highway. After nearly 20 years, I doubt it would get much more than 12 at best. He'd need about 15 gallons at minimum to make the trip. And back then, gas was a little over a buck a gallon. So if he came into town on an empty tank and wallet and left with an empty tank and wallet, how'd he get all the way to Abilene without running out of gas? And on top of that, he had to drive all the way out to the Mars' house to kill them. That's nearly 2 gallons right there. So tell me, how is that all possible?"
Davenport and Jameson exchanged a quick glance. Bogart cleared his throat and said,
"It's not, which means he was either lying or mistaken."
Decker said, "I don't buy it that he was mistaken. He was too specific on the details. It was just a small point that was overlooked when the cover story was put together."
"Whoa," said Milligan. "Where do you get a cover story?"
"Someone had to put it together."
"That is a huge and, in my mind, unjustified leap of logic."
"Well, I guess that's just the difference between my mind and yours."
Milligan screwed up his face at this comment and picked up his coffee.
"And remember, Lucinda's blood in Melvin's car. She never used that car," he said. "So how'd the blood get there? Montgomery sure as hell couldn't have put it there."
Bogart's phone rang. He answered the call, listened for a few moments, and then clicked off. He looked around the table.
"The Texas court has just decided to give Mars a full pardon. He's being released from prison."
"That's great news,"
said Jameson.
"If he's innocent," said Milligan sullenly. "Not so great if he's not."
"I wonder if he wants to go to Alabama," said Bogart.
"Alabama?"
asked Davenport.
"Why?"
"Family members of the victims are entitled to witness the execution, and although technically Montgomery wasn't convicted of the murders, he did confess to them, and it's not like Mars will get a second chance to see him put to death."
"Well, let's go ask him," said Decker.
Mars was sitting in a room in a rental house guarded by 3 FBI agents out of Austin. His lawyer, Mary Oliver, had obviously just arrived, because she was hugging Mars as Decker, Bogart, and the rest of the team showed up.
I knew it might be coming, said Mars, but it's still hard to believe.
Oliver said,
There will be a formal court proceeding where your record will be expunged, and I've already filed for compensation from the state. I don't think you'll have any problem getting the max payout.
After they all had finished congratulating him, Bogart told him about Montgomery's execution coming up.
I've made calls. They'll let you attend if you want to.
Mars looked over at Decker.
What do you think? Should I go?
Decker thought about this for a few moments.
If you think it might give you some closure, yes.
But you don't think he really did it.
And I could be wrong.
Decker paused. Besides, there's another reason for us to go to Alabama.
What's that?
Mrs. Montgomery.
The court proceeding was held the next day. Mars, dressed in a cheap suit, stood next to Mary Oliver as the judge apologized for what had happened and formally cleared him of all charges.
I can only hope, Mr. Mars, that the rest of your life will be full of nothing but positive events, said the judge.
He smacked his gavel and the proceedings were over. There were quite a few news people gathered outside the courtroom, all wanting a piece of Mars and his story. But by now, Bogart, Decker, and Milligan had joined the fray, and Decker used his bulk like a bowling ball to move Mars through the throngs of waving microphones to a waiting SUV. As they sped off, Decker said,
You're going to be the national news story du jour.
I'm surprised anybody still cares about it, said Mars.
They will, but only for one 24-hour news cycle.
Bogart handed him something. Mars looked down at it.
A cell phone?
Jameson answered.
It's actually a smartphone. You can get the internet on it. Do emails, texting, tweeting, Instagram, Snapchat, take pictures, and watch TV, and movies. Oh, and you can also make calls with it.
She added with a grin.
But sexting will just get you in trouble. So skip that one.
Mars rubbed a finger over the phone's screen.
Guess I got a lot of catching up to do.
Well, it's better than the alternative, noted Decker.
Since Mars was no longer a prisoner, he could travel without a guard and without being shackled. He sat on the United Airlines flight next to Decker. Bogart was across the aisle. Jameson and Davenport were in the seats behind Bogart. Milligan had volunteered to remain in Texas to keep working on the case locally. Mars looked out the window.
Haven't been on a plane in a long time.
They look pretty much the same.
Decker adjusted his sitting position, reclining his chair the maximum 1/18th of an inch allowed.
There's one difference. The seats have gotten smaller. Or maybe I've just gotten a lot bigger.
Mars continued to stare out the window.
Never thought I'd be leaving Texas.
I'm sure you thought you'd never be doing a lot of things.
I've never witnessed an execution.
Just so you know, Montgomery picked the electric chair over lethal injection.
Mars glanced sharply at him.
What the hell is that about?
Couldn't tell you. Alabama gives you a choice, and that was his.
Will his wife be there?
She's entitled to be. Whether she's coming or not, I don't know. I doubt she'll bring her son if she does.
And if he didn't kill my parents?
He clearly murdered several others. His capital sentence was justified under the law.
Mars nodded. How many innocent folks you figure were executed?
One is too many, and I'm pretty sure it's more than one. I came within a few minutes of being part of that group.
Like I said when I met you, you're one lucky guy after being one really unlucky guy.
Yeah, well, let's hope my luck holds.
Mars looked to the front of the plane and watched as the flight attendant positioned the beverage cart as a roadblock in front of the cockpit as one of the pilots came out to use the restroom.
When did they start doing that?
He asked.
After 9/11, replied Decker.
Oh, right.
Mars pulled his gaze away from the front of the plane and said to Decker,
You said we were coming here for Mrs. Montgomery, too.
That's right.
Why?
She was the only one to visit her husband the last few years.
Okay, why does that matter? Asked Mars.
If this was all set up, you're not going to do it over the phone. It's going to be face to face. She was the only face. She went to the prison and told her husband what he had to do, including all the details, so he could get his story straight. She probably did this over and over to make sure it all sunk in.
So she had to have contact with whoever really killed my parents?
She initiated this, not her husband.
That's the way I see it, yes.
But she's not just going to tell us who contacted her.
No, I don't think she will, replied Decker.
So what do we do then?
We find out as much as we can on our own, and then we confront her with it.
And hope she rolls over?
Yes. You ever remember anything about the stuff I asked you about?
Mars looked back out the window as the plane descended into Alabama.
I gave it a lot of thought. Only thing I really thought about, to tell the truth.
And?
Mars pointed to the back of his right ear. My dad had a scar right here. I saw it when I was a kid and we were horsing around on the floor. Just roughhousing, you know. I touched it and asked him about it. He flew into a rage. I mean, I thought he was going to beat the shit out of me. Then my mom came in the room, saw what was happening, and calmed him down. After that, he was never really the same around me. He started wearing his hair a lot longer.
To cover the scar?
That's right. At least I think so.
Did you ever ask your mother about it?
No, I was too scared. I'd never seen my dad like that. I mean, he was scary.
Decker stared at the seat back in front of him. Did it look like a wound? Like from a gun or knife?
Not a gun. It was more like a long cut.
So, a knife?
Yeah, that's what I think. Look, I know it's not much.
Well, it's more than we had, Melvin. We just have to figure out what it means.
Chapter 22. Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Charles Montgomery had a half hour left to live. He had eaten his last meal from a vending machine, a barbecue sandwich and a can of Coke. His stomach would not have to digest the meal. Bogart, Decker, and Mars were sitting in the front row of one of the viewing rooms. Jameson had elected not to come. Davenport was immediately behind Decker in the second row. There were three other people in the room. Two were journalists and one was with the Alabama State Bar. None of the families of the victims had come except for Mars. The journalists had recognized Mars and had tried to interview him, but Bogart had flashed his badge and quickly put a stop to that. The curtains were pulled so that the death chamber was not currently visible. In an adjacent room, the family of the condemned was allowed to sit. The curtains were also closed there, so they didn't know if Regina Montgomery was here or not. Mars was looking nervous, and there were beads of sweat on his face, although the room was cool. Decker noted this and put a large hand on the other man's shoulder.
You gonna hold it together, or you wanna get out of here?
Mars bent over and took several deep breaths.
I was just thinking how close I came to this.
Decker removed his hand.
But it's not you, Melvin. It's the other guy.
But we can leave if you want.
Mars straightened.
No, I'm good.
You sure?
Yeah.
Bogart leaned over and said,
They're coming.
A dozen correctional officers surrounded Montgomery as he left the holding cell where he had been brought the previous Tuesday. They were led to the death chamber by a pastor holding a Bible and saying a prayer. A hymn was being played over the sound system. The gurney had been removed from the chamber and the electric chair had been brought out of storage. Nicknamed Yellow Mama, because its color came from the yellow paint used on highway lines, it had been built by a British inmate in the 1920s. It was massive and sturdy looking. His head bowed, the pastor peeled away and went to the viewing area where Decker and the others were. He took his seat at the end of the row and began reading his Bible. The correctional officers escorted Montgomery into the chamber. Then the curtains were opened so that Montgomery could see into the visitor rooms. Decker and the others now saw that Regina Montgomery was indeed in attendance. Her son was not with her. Montgomery's gaze lingered on his wife for a few moments, but no words were said or even mouthed between them. Finally, Regina looked away. The warden read the death warrant out loud, and Montgomery was asked if he wanted to say any last words. He looked at his wife again. He started to say something, then shook his head and looked away from her. Then his gaze found and settled on Melvin Mars. The two men stared at each other for a long, torturous moment. Montgomery again looked away without saying anything. His expression wasn't one of remorse. To Decker, it looked more like one of disgust.
The warden went into another adjacent room where there was a man on the phone. This was to make sure that there was no last-minute reprieve of the death sentence from the governor. There wasn't, and the warden gave the appropriate signal. 10 of the officers left the room, passing by the warden as he returned to the death chamber. The 2 remaining officers readied Montgomery by taking off his handcuffs and leg chains, placing him in the chair, and strapping down his arms, legs, and head to the wood of Yellow Mama. The metal helmet connected to the electrodes was placed on his head, and then a hood was placed over that. There were also electrodes attached to his arms and legs. The power supply to the chair was plugged in. The warden went into the generator room where he engaged the equipment by pulling on several levers. Mars gripped the armrest of his chair, and his breaths grew ragged. Decker put an arm around Mars's shoulders. "Almost over," he murmured. He glanced over at Regina Montgomery. She was looking down at the floor. Decker looked back at Montgomery. He couldn't see the man's face because of the hood, but his entire body was tensed against the yellow wood. He looked like a figure carved in stone on its throne. One of the officers picked up a sign that read "Ready" and held it against the glass window leading into the generator room. The 2 officers left the chamber, and they all heard the door slam. One of the officers gave the requisite signal by knocking twice on the door. The warden immediately sent the first of 2 power surges to the chair, 8 amps and 1,850 volts, that lasted 34 seconds each. Decker watched as Montgomery slammed back against the chair as the current hit him like a tank round. He lashed against the restraints. An electrode tore away from his leg as he thrashed. Smoke started to rise off his head. The smell of charred flesh permeated the viewing room. There was a scream, and they looked over in time to see Regina Montgomery faint and topple out of her chair to the floor. Footsteps were heard as prison personnel rushed to aid her. The second surge hit Montgomery, and he started to shake uncontrollably. They heard him scream, gasp, scream again, and then he fell forward, kept in the chair solely by the restraints. The smell of burnt flesh became even stronger. It seemed to be driven right into their pores. As they watched, a small flickering flame rose from the cloth hood before dying out, along with the occupant of the chair.
"Oh my God,"
hissed Davenport. She jumped up and rushed from the room. They could hear her being sick outside in the hall. Next came the sound of the generator providing the electricity powering down and growing silent. The curtains were drawn, and the image of the dead man, smoke still rising off him, was gone. They heard more rushing feet, and then the sounds of a fire extinguisher being deployed. It was over. Chapter 23.
"That was the longest few minutes of my life,"
said Davenport, who still looked gray and nauseous. They were sitting around a table in the lobby of the hotel where they were staying near the prison. Decker shot her a glance. Imagine how it was for Montgomery. She looked at him and turned a bit pink in the face.
"I know. I didn't mean it that way. It was just horrible."
Although Jameson hadn't attended, she seemed as distraught and subdued as the others.
"Did they confirm he was actually dead?"
Bogart nodded wearily. "By law, they have to. The doctor came in and did his tests. Montgomery was pronounced dead at 5 minutes past the hour. Regina Montgomery was revived and checked out by a doctor at the prison. Then a state trooper drove her home." Decker turned to Mars, who hadn't said a word since they had left the prison. He looked like he had no idea where he was. "You okay?" Decker asked. Mars shook his head.
"Dude was on fire," he said dully.
"That's why they don't use the chair anymore," said Decker. "Too many things can go wrong. I think the state of Alabama should stop giving the condemned a choice." Davenport said fiercely,
"Well, better yet, just abolish capital punishment."
She looked at Mars.
"They came close to executing you, an innocent man. That's reason enough just to do away with it. There are no second chances."
Mars nodded curtly and looked away. Bogart said,
"Well, that's way above my pay grade, and not an argument we're going to settle tonight. I think we all need to get some sleep and then regroup tomorrow."
He looked at Decker.
What else did you want to do while we're here?
Talk to Regina Montgomery again. We need to find out where the money came from.
She's not going to willingly tell us anything,
pointed out Jameson.
She almost kicked us out last time.
But she might slip up, or by not telling us something, she might just answer our questions.
Bogart rose. Well, again, nothing else is going to happen tonight. So let's just call it an early evening. I don't think I'm good for anything else. Witnessing an execution leaves you utterly drained. At least it does me.
Bogart headed off, and a still shaky Davenport followed. As Jameson was about to leave, Decker snagged her by the arm. Hold up, Alex.
What is it?
Decker looked first at her and then at Mars. You two up to going somewhere? Right now? Because I don't think that we should wait.
They knocked for a long time, and only when it was clear that they weren't going to leave did Regina Montgomery answer the door. She stood there defiantly in the doorway, still dressed in the clothes she had worn to the execution.
What do you want?
She snapped. Decker said, We just had some questions for you.
My husband was executed tonight. Can't you leave me in peace?
She added shrilly.
I can understand how you feel, Mrs. Montgomery, but I wouldn't be here unless I thought it really important. Can we come in? It won't take more than a few minutes.
She looked at Jameson, and then her gaze fell on Mars, and her face twisted in disgust.
What, you mean him too?
Him especially, said Decker. He's...
I know who the hell he is. I don't have...
Decker said, It'll only be a few minutes, and since this pertains to Mr. Mars, he needs to be included. Please, Mrs. Montgomery.
Jameson stepped forward and took the woman by the hand.
Let's just go in and sit. Have you had anything to eat? Maybe a cup of tea to help settle your nerves? I can only imagine what you've had to deal with today. I'm so sorry.
That would be... I can't eat anything but some hot tea, yes.
Just show me where, and I'll fix it right up.
Jameson smoothly steered Montgomery inside while Decker and Mars followed. When Jameson turned around, Decker shot her an appreciative look. After Regina Montgomery showed Jameson where things were in the kitchen, she and Mars settled around a coffee table in the small, cluttered living room. Back in the kitchen, Jameson put a kettle on the cooktop to heat up the water. Then she found a cup and a box of tea bags. While the water was heating, she rejoined them. When she sat down across from Montgomery, Jameson's gaze flitted over Montgomery and held briefly on her wrist. She looked surprised. Montgomery was staring at Decker.
Well?
She said crossly. Is your son here? Asked Decker.
No,
she said sharply.
He's staying at a friend's. I thought it best. No reason for him to have to deal with this.
That was a good idea.
She glanced at Mars sitting next to Decker, and her mouth curved into a frown. Mars stared right back at her. He seemed about to say something when Decker spoke.
Tommy told us about the insurance money.
She was startled by this.
What? When did you... How did you know where he was?
Howling cougars, said Decker, pointing to the photo on the table across from them.
Well, so what? Chuck had life insurance. I'm the beneficiary. Nothing wrong with that.
For $30,000?
She jerked again.
Who told you that?
She demanded.
We're the FBI, Mrs. Montgomery. We can find out things.
The tea kettle whistle blew.
Jameson rose and went into the kitchen to prepare the tea. She poured it into a cup, and then looking around for some crackers, pulled aside a curtain covering a small niche in the kitchen. What she saw inside made her start. She snagged a box of crackers and some peanut butter off a shelf and walked back over to the sink.
Hey, Decker,
she called out.
Can you give me a hand? I know Mrs. Montgomery doesn't need us to be here any longer than necessary.
A bit put out by her request, Decker rose and went into the kitchen. While Jameson was spreading peanut butter over the crackers, she jerked her head toward the open curtain.
Check that out,
she said quietly. Decker turned, saw what was there, and glanced quickly at Jameson, who hiked her eyebrows.
And there's something else I saw, she said.
A minute later, they came back into the room, Jameson with the tea and Decker with the plate of peanut butter crackers.